Folks, welcome to the Hang Your Own Hang podcast, a monthly podcast about hammocks, hammock camping, and everything related. Our goal is to enlighten you if you're a ground dweller and to entertain you if you're already a tree dweller. I'm Jonathan Kupel, and this is my co-host, Mark Baldwin.
Good evening, Jonathan. How you doing?
I'm really good. This is really exciting. We've been doing this for a year.
Yes, our 1 year anniversary since we started this, and it's been a lot of fun.
It has. I went back and listened to some of our early episodes. It's been interesting. The quality of our audio has gone way up. I think the quality of our conversations has gone way up.
A little bit.
Okay. Fair enough. And it's been interesting seeing the growth of the people who are listening to us out there on communicating with folks on Facebook and stuff like that. It's been fun.
Yeah, it's been real interesting seeing how much it has grown on, especially, you know, the Facebook posts and all, and even on the forum and all, and about how many, you know, from the one or two people to it's grown a little bit more here and there, but it's been a lot of fun. So,
well, we'll be looking forward to another few years of this. I think we've got some interesting interviews already lined up for our next year, 2016 to 2017, going into this winter. So,
yeah, no, already getting into 2017. Okay, already.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is going to be a really good episode today. One of the things that I think is really neat is after 12 months, we're able to bring, amongst a number of other folks, we're able to bring back Sean Emery, Shug, to talk to us a little bit about his experience as a cold weather camper. I think between the two of us, you're actually better at it than I am. You've got the record.
Yeah, I did make it. You know, I did make it down to a minus. I forgot what it was last year. Minus 17, something like that. And using a pad and extra wool blanket and all. But we could get into that later. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and it's, you know, it's all about being prepared and all. But we'll let our guests get into that. And yeah, Shug, our first episode coming back again. So must not have scared him off.
Yeah. Clearly not. So let's get started with the interview.
Sounds great.
Today for our interview, we've got kind of a really special event. We've called together some of the hammock campers out there that everybody's familiar with that have really low temperature records for winter or cold weather camping. We thought this would be a great opportunity for Mark and I and for our listeners to learn a lot about some of the techniques and tricks and some of the ways that you can stay warm in the cold weather. I think, Mark, the way I heard it best one time was when we were talking to Peter Pan from
Jacks Are Better.
Yeah, from Jacks
Are Better for 200.
Jacks. And he said, what we're really trying to do here is not talk about hammocks. We're talking about four-season hammock camping. And staying warm in the wintertime, this is one of the most challenging problems we have. So what we have is a number of great, really interesting guests. You have heard our first one, Shug.
Why, thank you.
Why don't you tell us what your personal temperature record is and what you use in terms of your system to keep warm?
System kind of changes the winter a little bit. I've been down to minus 40 degrees Fahrenheit, though it could have been a couple degrees colder because my thermometer craps out at LL. But I like to think that maybe it was really, you know, minus 42. But I have no proof of that. That's just my little mind thinking it. But minus 40, it doesn't matter. That was crispy cold. And part of that deal was to go out and test the limits of a system I had been using. It's just a pod type system with a, I absolutely knew I would be warm out there. And you know, I think the thing with winter camping is to, you got to forget the lightweight mindset really, and just bring, I mean, it's miserable to be cold in the night. And you got a long day to be up about. So between the pod system and just braving the as cold as you want, and depending where you live, and here, of course, I'm in Minnesota, and it's a long winter. So if you want to go out, but for that trip was one where I called up Strung out and I said, you want to go? This would be pretty cold. We should go out for it. And the winds looked light, so that even was even more appealing. So there you go.
Yeah. All right. And next on our rotation, we've got Bic, also known to some as Hiker Dad. Bic, what's your personal temperature record and what's your system for staying warm?
Yeah, well, I'm pretty, you know, I'm pretty impressed by my record, but it's nothing compared. The coldest I've been out is negative, and, you know, I just echo everything Luke said about it's no fun being, I've been there, and I never wanted to be there again, so, you know, now when I go out, I always tend to overdo it, and I find myself sweating, if you can believe it, at night when I'm in. So, usually what I have, though, is really a stack of a DIY quilt stacked with usually another underquilt, and then I usually accompany that with a closed-cell foam pad in the bottom of my as well. And then in addition on the top, then I again stack a couple more quilts. And that usually works pretty well for me, along with I have a wool. It's not really an anorak, but a capote uses a pillow. And that also is really well kind of pull over my head and kind of capture some warmth over that as well when I'm sleeping. But that more or less is the
Yeah, wool's amazing.
Yeah, well, that's the wool capote from Sleeping Guide is what I use. Nick will tell you that it looks ridiculous, but it's phenomenal. It's really warm, and it's just an amazing piece to have in the hammock.
Okay. Well, that's a great lead-in. Nick of the Woods, what's your personal record, and what system are you using to stay warm?
Well, I've kind of started from the ground up, and anybody that's done the winter camping with me will tell you I've gotten away with a lot that I'd never recommend to anybody, ever. I know Bic's got some videos out there where I'm out, well, we're out camping at minus 5, minus 15, and I've got, I don't know, no underquilt, no pad, maybe a 50 degree. I think I had a 50 degree underquilt once at about minus 15. But now I usually throw a 15 degree sleeping bag, down bag. I'll throw on top of the blanket. And a couple of years ago, as a wedding gift from a couple of guys on hammock forums, and the hammock gear actually hooked me up with a minus 20 custom underquilt. And I could never go back. I know it so much. I think my coldest, well, I've got, there was one winter, I think it was 2014, that polar vortex winter. I had about 70 nights below zero. I'm sorry, it was below freezing. But I had 20 nights below, 20 below, and really put my gear to the test. Found all sorts of challenges with that. But yeah, the underquilt really makes a big difference, and I'm a pretty warm sleeper, though. You know, like I said, my 15-degree bag will take me down to 40 below, and the thermometer that I use when I'm camping to kind of record those temperatures, it has like a 10-foot cable that hangs off the end of it, and so the battery pack stays warm inside my shirt, and then I'll hang the little 10-foot cable sensor outside the hammock to record the outside temp, and it's gotten to 40 below and then kind of shut down. You know, wind chills can be all over the place. I'm sure a lot of you have probably had wind chills at 40, 50, 60 below. If you got a decent tarp, it's usually not much of a problem. For me, for layers, when it gets real cold, I've gone wool all the way in my first couple of years. I didn't have really a lot of nicer gear, and I was using layers that are really cheap, like Walmart fleece, you know, sweatshirts, pajama pants, things like that. But now it's just all wool all the way. Got heavy wool pants and wool base layers and shirts, and I'll go through maybe two pair of cheap military gloves and mittens. You know, by the end of the winter season, they're burned and torn up, you know, from chopping wood and throwing things in the fire, but they're cheap and they're always warm. So,
all right, last but not least, we've got Franke. I think a lot of our listeners are already familiar with Franke. Thanks for coming back and talking to us again. What's your personal temp record, and how are you staying warm?
Well, I'm in Oklahoma now, so it's warm all the time here. But in the winter, my lowest is minus 31, and I like to use vapor barriers. So I have tons of down throughout the night. That's like, I got the hammock gear as well. They kind of, you know, hooked me up with that. So I think they were minus 15 for the top and the bottom. And I wore vapor barriers underneath on my skin. And I actually had it some nights where I was so warm that I didn't even need to put my jacket on by using that. So it worked out pretty well. But I always had problems with my feet getting too cold, and it's because I was wearing too many socks that were too tight, and then when I took them off, it actually, like, and just had, like, you know, one pair of socks on and then a much bigger one over it, it kept me warm. So vapor barriers are my thing for staying warm.
Okay, great, thanks.
So I guess we'll get right into the questions. I'll start with Shug. Why the heck would anybody want to camp out in the winter? Where it's nice and warm inside, camping in the summer, it's all nice, it's snowing, it's cold, it's windy. Why do we want to do this?
It's quiet. It's white. You can see so much in the woods. The moon just reflects off the snow back there and just lights it up sometimes at night. And then On the other hand, it can be cloudy, foggy, and crispy cold, and the trees are popping. And really, like any backpacker, it's just to get away from chores and life and media and even family a little bit, you know. And I don't mean you're running from your family, but hey, man, you know, it's good to be missed for a couple of days. People realize, oh, yeah, you do that when you're here, don't you? And again, it's a long, you know, it's a long winter. Winter months really sort of beat out the summer months here in Minnesota. So, but once you've done it and you realize you're not going to die, the worst that's going to happen, I mean, even if you were a dumb backpacker and brought a summer 50-degree sleeping bag with you, I still don't think you'd die, you know, unless you just laid there. But I've had the trips, like the other guy said, where you have to had to get up really early and stomp around some, doing sit-ups, go light a fire. You know, Hickory and I just moved up here. We just started camping with subpar gear. We'd just bring everything we had. And our debrief in the morning would usually be, I was neither warm nor cold. You know, it's mind over matter a little bit. Then you get up and start moving around in the day, and, you know, your activity helps a lot of regulating your heat or lack of heat in the day up here. So it's kind of a fun thing to do and a necessary thing to do up here. Plus you get to play with your gear.
Yeah. Also, cause I mean, for even anybody else, is it, when we were actually just in the opening, we were just talking about, you know, our temperature, the lowest we've slept in the temperatures outside and all. Is it a challenge for anybody? You know, you look for that cold temperature, try and beat that record.
Every year. I think it's always a challenge.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Last year, I hosted the Wisconsin Frozen Butt, and we had our coldest trip ever. I think the first night was 27 below, and the second was 3 below. And it was kind of a warmer winter in general. I think that might have been the coldest weekend of the whole winter around here. But I could have been happier. You know, everybody got real excited. We kept watching the temperature on the forecast dropping every day. And we're like, oh, here it comes. And,
yeah,
you know, you think it's going to be 17 below. And then the day comes, it's 20 below, 25. And, you know, and then you do it. And, you know, it's kind of a really cool, kind of a big deal for a lot of people, especially if they don't do it all the time.
It's intense. It's intense watching that temperature drop lower and lower. Oh, it's 24.7, 24.9. Everybody, you see fear in someone's eyes, man. That's a horrible thing because, you know, we had a guy on the winter, the frozen butt hang here in Minnesota last year. He made a smart move. He wasn't prepared for the cold that came. I think we got down into around minus 19 last year, minus 20, and he wasn't ready for that. You know, a lot of people jump into winter camping, and it can, just like the Limbel Gorge, it's either going to kind of put a little hurting on you, or it's going to really be a thrill like Cry of the Wild that you're out there, and it gets intense the colder it gets, and you go, those people don't want to be out here in this, and here we are, standing out in it, sleeping out in it.
Yeah, last year I had two people that were they came to the Frozen Butt Hang. It was their first time ever hammock camping, and they took it on. One of them was able to stay warm each night. He didn't even have a tarp or quilt system. He actually, this guy, like 6'8", too, he rigged his hammock through one of his tents for shelter from the snow. He's from Siberia, so he wasn't too concerned, I guess. But then you know, the other participant came out, and she really rocked it. She's gone off the deep end with hammocks now, and she says she will definitely be there this year. She got a lot better gear this year. But it was her first time in a hammock, and she had such a good time, she wants more. So, you know, it's a lot of it's, you know, how you look at it, and, you know, do you want to be out, you know, freezing cold for one night, or do you want to, you know, get into this as a regular hobby? You know, in the north here, it's cold 6 months out of the year. So a lot of people, they go indoors, but, you know, if you can kind of take on the winter challenge, and, you know, it'll open up a lot of opportunities.
And there's no bugs.
Well, I mean, I've actually been out there and see a little spider on the snow or some kind of little gnatty thing that's like just sitting on the snow, you know, and cold. You touch it with your finger and it moves, and I don't know what that is. There's a couple of, you know, they're definitely not up flying around. They're in some sort of dormant, weird state. And I don't know if they get kicked up by a passing boot or snowshoe from beneath, but, you know, but no flying bugs or anything. And that's good, but you just get that cold air of just wanting to attack exposed, and that's fun. That's just really fun too. Like, you know, people, I've been asked so many times off some videos about getting up and having a morning constitutional in minus 38 degree weather. And that means dropping your trousers and doing number two. And it's like your body has been working. You know, you've eaten all that stuff to keep yourself warm. Your body's churning. And I go, I don't know what it is, but it's never, you know, you just drop your trousers like you would in any other time, and you don't linger, and you sit there and look at your lily white thighs with goosebumps coming in going, man, do I need a tan? But, it feels invigorating. And I think it's because your body's working from inside, and you definitely feel your body go through different elements all day. You're constantly checking, hey, have I moved around enough? Did I eat enough? But, you know, the other guys can chip in on that too, because I'm sure we all experience it on a play with winter camping. You can't do it without sort of just like hanging a hammock. There's more than just bringing a bunch of warm stuff. You know, this body regulation and remembering to eat hot drinks and don't go to sleep with cold feet because they're not going to warm up in the night. Some simple things that you learn the hard but fun way.
Yeah, when I talk about winter camping with beginners, you know, a lot of times they're worried about all those things. But one of the things that I point out is in the summertime, you know, a lot of beginners, they don't maybe drink enough water. They don't really care about what they're eating. They look at their calories. They don't really tend to their feet so much. In the wintertime, you do a lot more of that. But I tell them that in the wintertime, the little things, like, they affect you a lot more. So if you're a little dehydrated, you're gonna feel colder, and you drink a little bit of water, and like magic, 15 minutes later, you have a little snack and some water, and just like magic, all of a sudden you warm up. You know, just the little things that a lot of people take for granted when it's warm out, they can have a big impact in the cold.
Mm, yeah. And one of the things that's interesting, Mark is probably sick of hearing it, but my story about me freezing to death on my first hammock camping trip. Well, he was sweating his butt off in his tent with, 69 degrees at night or something like that, because I didn't understand and I hadn't thought everything through and tested things. You know, first experiences, especially winter camping, any fails out there? Vic, we could start with you.
Yes. Yes, indeed, I have failed.
That's actually personal.
No. I think we've all failed that some can just go out, get a 20, and deep in a hammock with no underfill and be fine.
Maybe a pair of socks.
And that's a true story. He does that. I don't understand
it. I've seen it, too. I can vouch for that. I've seen it. And he wasn't even drunk or anything. It wasn't like he went to crawl in the hammock pie-eyed. He's just one of those Wisconsin boys.
Right. So, as far as fails go, actually, as I think the other speak, I was kind of just thinking about, you know, my very first kind of one of my very cold weather was actually just an overnighter at Afton State Park. And I'm trying to think. I think Frankie, I think you were there. And I don't. Maybe I'm wrong. I know that we've camped in State Park before, but either way,
and Afton gets cold, man. Afton gets cold up on that high ridge above the river down there. That can be a cold spot. Just thought I wanted to throw that in.
This was like a late fall, almost winter, and I was trying all kinds of goof it to stay warm, and I was kind of trying to tenets of my, like, DIY underquilt synthetic bag I had stuffed with deep down that was just terrible. And, man, I think it got into, like, the 20s. It wasn't super cold at all, but I was freezing, and I took everything I could. I took my pack. I put everything I had underneath me just to try and kind of keep it through the night, keep warm through the night. And that was earlier I alluded to the saying my records, and it's just miserable being cold through the night. And so I don't think when you make that mistake and you screw up like that once or twice, you don't make that mistake too many times after that, because it's really something to just be laying there in a cold for, you know, 10 hours. You can make a fire and warm yourself back up. Yeah, that one stands out in my mind as one of my worst trips.
Yeah, anybody else?
And, you know, well, I was going to say, you know, I bet that comes back because we all have to go through it. And it's, you know, it's like I say, it's not always the gear you have sleep. It's did you eat enough? How did you feel when you went to, you know, the hydration? But it is a long night in the winter. And if you're cold, it just does not go away. You're just going to have to, you know, unless you get up and you, for some reason, it seems like there's this internal resistance always, like, I don't want to get up and do jumping jacks. And sometimes that might be what you have to do, you know,
right,
to get your body warm and then get back in that bag and hope that it's just a little bit better. So, yeah, those fails are actually very important and rethink what you're doing.
When I was first getting started with winter hammock camping, I mean, I never really called it and bailed on a trip. But I didn't have really the proper gear in any sense at all. So I was trying to come up with alternatives. And so I would test out layering different types of, you know, foam and vapor barriers in different ways and see how they would work. And I remember a couple trips. I remember going to bed the second night, and the rocks of ice inside my down bay were, you know, so big that, I mean, I couldn't even lay comfortably in it. And I remember trying to squeeze into a mummy bag with five layers of wool on and just kind of feeling miserable. I mean, it worked, but it definitely wasn't comfortable at all. But yeah, just pushing my gear and kind of testing it and seeing what worked. At the time, it's all I could do.
So it's going with the fails and all. Now, once we learn a little bit more, how do we manage the our CBS or our cold butt syndrome? And we'll go with Nick on this one.
Cold butt syndrome, yeah. One of the first things I used to do, because I didn't have any wool clothing to like shove under my back or butt, I had no quilt. I would use my Reflectix. I had one of those pouches, little DIY freezer-bag cooking pouches I used in wintertime. If I got cold in the middle of the night, I just shove that under my butt or some extra clothes or whatever was I had with a decent under quilt. I haven't really had that problem anymore. But I remember just kind of piling stuff up under me when I had nothing else. Just anything that would keep that nylon off my back. I think nylon is one of the it just sucks the heat out of you, especially with camp. If you're sweating at night and you don't have any insulation, it's just terrible.
It's like aluminum. Aluminum sucks the heat right out of you too. You know, not that I have an aluminum hammock, but I may be onto something.
I think frosted nylon is probably one of the coldest things found in the planet nowadays.
So I actually have a pretty good fail story, and I first went to the frozen butt hang just to go say hi to everybody, and you know, Shug was there, and you know, a bunch of other people, really cool guys and stuff. I rolled up in a gorilla suit and stuff to kind of just, you know, be, and then I went out to go on by Section 13 up on the Spear hiking trail to go, just to go get in some practice, and I got some like pretty intense winds just came and hit, it was my dog Tail and I, and we got hit pretty bad, and we descended down to go towards, the community center area, and then it just got so bad. So I had to set up camp, and I got into the bush, but it was kind of like exposed there and not as deep as I wanted to. And I had my tarp pitched pretty low, and you know, tried to still keep it low to the ground, and the wind just kept nailing us. And then my tarp broke, and like the ridgeline completely snapped. And so my tarp was like done, and I have my dog underneath my hammock because she can take the winds, but I was just like super paranoid, even the northern dog. So I grabbed her and I put her in the hammock with me, and I grabbed my tarp, and I kind of like, we were like a giant burrito, like I tied it around us and just kind of like stayed in it and stuff. And it was like easily the worst night I've ever had in my hammock, like by far. It was like terrible. Apparently, I guess the guys at the frozen butt didn't have it that bad. And I lost my camera up in Section 13 too, because I fell and like all my stuff fell out of my pocket and stuff like that. But yeah, it was really terrible, and it was a big like learning experience and stuff, you know, just to know like when to stop, you know, when the weather gets too bad, like don't try to keep pushing on. Like it's just better to be safe, you know, and be secure and kind of like hold down the fort and then go when the weather is calmed down a little bit. So that was pretty bad.
That's true. But didn't you find out, Frankie, that, taking those experimental, I remember that trip, you dressed as a gorilla, you know, and we'd all been sitting out there with frozen brains for a few days, and it was like, you know, you can see this gorilla come walking down through the snow, and that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. That's, you know, and I know that's like a Halloween costume, and there's some sweat building in there. It probably doesn't feel good. He's taking one. But, you know, to go and do what Frankie did and to figure that out, and big part of winter camping too, again, you can't approach it like a summertime camping trip or a spring or a early fall. You have to pay attention to things a lot more, or, you know, those 1, 2, 3s of things going bad can add up really quickly, and it gets dire. You know, I even rethink it now for solos out there a little bit into my tender age of 58, bring me in reach. But yeah, that's a good story, Frank, and I bet you learned a ton from that.
All right, I learned a whole bunch. I mean, it was like just like little things, just like not. I always have trouble figuring out when the sun is going to set in winter because it takes like 9 hours. It seems so like. I'm like, oh, maybe I can push on a little further because I have way more sunlight than I actually do or something. But yeah, it was a learning experience. Unfortunately, I've never been in that situation again. So I'm glad it happened. I'm glad it happened close to home. And if I hadn't done a little test or something and that had happened on the big trip, it could have been, you know, pretty terrible. And you guys found my camera, and somebody took a picture of their poop on it. I know that won't make them think.
Yeah,
I think it was.
We were taking the day hike up there, and it was like a pink Canon or something.
Yeah, it was a pink camera. Yeah. And
yeah.
then I, I ran into Strung out and I was like, so was it you who took a picture of his poop? And he was like dying. He thought it was really funny. So,
yeah, it was funny. I mean, but isn't it exciting to do that and sort of face that, you know, it's like, well, I mean, you know, the trail is where you were down in there. So even though it's a well-traveled trail, you take a little bit of a risk in the winter of like, you know, there's not going to be as many people coming by, especially where the snowmobile day hiker sort of pathways end, where it's okay, now you're breaking snow and going on to some fresh wilderness. There may not be anybody to come back there to help you if you do go south.
Oh, yeah, like the snowmobile trail wasn't near there. I was just right past the Beaver Dam right there. I know you know where that is. Right after Section 13, I was, complete learning experience, and it's just something that, like, it just sticks with you. And you apply it to many things, not just winter, but just, like, you know, other trips, just to, you know, be as prepared as possible. You know, you want to stay alive out there. It's cold.
But those always make the best stories, don't they? No, nobody wants to
hear great campfire stories.
Yeah. Oh, we were sitting around toasty warm. We had marshmallows and hot coffee. Yeah, save it. I want to hear about
exactly.
I just want to chime in real quick. Does anybody remember the first Wisconsin frozen butt and sort of the fails on that one? I think there were a total of four people that kind of showed up, had some pretty big gear failures, and they left the next day. One person ended up driving like 90 miles to get out of the woods, and he left behind probably 50 pounds worth of gear. Yeah. A lot of those people have come back, though,
give it a redo, give it a mulligan, right? Like, let's go at it again.
Yeah.
You know, and I do believe that winter camping is sure you got to have the gear that you personally trust. Like, you know, when Frankie, I know when you were doing that trip you were just talking about, you were testing out, if I remember, your vapor barrier system. And, you know, is a fairly complex system, and you got to go get familiar with it. And, you know, it's like anything. It's like Nick talking about the wool. I remember going on a first winter hang and just, having way too much down on, because you're hanging with a ton of people, so it's a bigger fire. And I go with a mixture of wool and down is what I like, because I'm either pulking or occasionally still carry a pack. But I basically pulk when I winter camp now, because I can bring a lot of chopped up meat to eat through the day. You can bring your fuel. You've got to really think, like when Frankie did his hike, that vapor barrier system made perfect sense, because you were on the move. You can't be hauling a pulk and trying to through hike that trail. So there's a mindset and a trust that you have to have yourself. Like Nick, he knows he can just go in a hammock and he's not going to die if it's minus 20. And he doesn't have, I think he's soft now that he's got an undercoat. You've done gone soft. Yeah. The equipment's important, but I think your frame of reference when you go out there is just as important. You don't want to be cocky, but you want to feel kind of confident. Just go, I'm not going to die, but I may have a really cold night. And you'll live through that.
Yeah, I think I go in a lot of times expecting that.
Yeah, I think we all are.
Tonight's going to be terrible, but we're doing this, you know?
But, you know, when you wake up on these group hangs and, you know, it's that morning check-in with everybody, the first thing you say to somebody is, how'd you sleep? And you, these guys going, well, they're pretty good. And usually what comes out, 75.9% of the time is going, but my feet were a little cold, though. So it's the feet that's the place where people have a pretty warm night, but they have some cold feet, and that will keep you up all night long. You know, if you could take care of that foot thing, like wear less socks, you know, it's going to be a little different for everybody. Like, I zip my jacket over the end of my thing, and that's not an original trick. That's an old, you know, sleep on the ground, you know, pull your park up, zip it up, and pull it up over the foot of your sleeping bag on the ground too. Just get a little extra down. But even that sometimes can fail. You know, everything that you can count on can fail on you winter camping, where you just suddenly go, I'm cold all of a sudden. Now I've got to get warm now. And I know you guys have all had that too. Like, it's 3 p.m. You just realize, I just got cold. Why? Well, I'm not drinking. I'm not eating. I'm running my mouth. I haven't walked. I haven't done any chores. Boom, you know. And you have to take care of it right then. Make a hot drink, eat something, walk around, go fidget with your tarp or anything, and you come back and you're 100% good to go.
Yeah, and it feels great. One of my favorite things about winter camping, though, is the group camping aspect, the camaraderie. I feel like it's just, there's much more of it than as opposed to like summer camping and stuff, because people are always checking out gear and things. But in winter, they're always like, are you good? Because I have this and this extra and stuff, and they're looking out for people. Mm-hmm. Like my first frozen butt that we did, we hit like minus 19.8, and my friend Skygazer was like, I have an extra pea pod. Do you want to use it? I'm like, yeah, totally. You know, and, you know, using this and that, and, you know, it's just, I don't know, it's just really fun. But like, you know, Shug was saying, in the mornings, you're always checking on how everybody's doing and stuff. And the second night's usually a lot better because you can improve upon it. So it's just pretty fun.
You can go over there and say, well, look, let's, you're around people. Let's go check out your, when somebody says, yeah, you know, I've got a 0-degree underquilt, but yeah, my bottom was a little bit chilly or my back was cold. Let's go, hey man, let's go take a look at that and, get your rig out. It's usually just a gap somewhere at the top or the inch buckles. That's really fun to be able to see a guy get dialed in on a piece of equipment he has purchased and now is testing out there. And, you know, those kind of things are really fun. And then you're sort of back down to the central fire pit. I do think when you're around a lot more people, keep a bigger fire going, the spirit of it is warmer. I know on a couple of solo trips and stuff, you have to work a little harder to stay warm because you don't have the warmth of the humanity with you.
Yeah, that's totally true.
Now, you talk about all the gear and stuff. Now, how does roll of food come in? You know, what you're eating, what kind of calories you're putting in hot weather. Everybody's always saying, you know, drink water. You don't want to dehydrate, heat stroke and everything. But a lot of people don't think about staying warm with food in cold temperatures. Beck, what do you think?
You keep picking me for all the perfect ones, I think, for me, so that's excellent.
Hey, you know, we do our research.
The one thing I think people know me for is eating, so I do a good job. I always try and eat. And, you know, I guess for me in the winter, I don't think too much about it because, like other people have kind of alluded to, this idea of this kind of community, there's a big fire, there's a lot of, usually, you know, when I'm going winter camp, I'm usually with a good-sized group of people, and so that means a big fire, a lot of talking, and in my case, campfire. So in the winter, I usually don't have too much of a problem. I'm eating anything and everything I can bring. You know, you can bring all kinds of meats and all kinds of. One of my favorites, Nick will back me up on this, is toaster strudels. I think toaster strudels around the campfire is phenomenal. I love to do a little snack. I bring them, I pack them, and I have a little tiny grill. I'll just set it over a couple logs on the side of the fire, and I can kind of toast up some toaster strudels. And that is, I know is not the most, but it's one of the most delicious things.
Toaster strudel. That's like a country club pop tart, is what that is. The flaky crust and that gooey topping. Oh, I gotta have one right now.
It's phenomenal when you're winter camping. But the other thing I discovered at a frozen butt hang a couple years ago was we had come back from doing a section by Caribou River. We came back and we stopped at the Finland Rec, or not Finland Rec, but the Finland store there. And I bought a couple of Jack's pizza. And everybody was laughing at me until I would take a couple rocks and my little grill and kind of slowly toast pizza next to the fire. And it cooked perfectly, folded it in half and had like this giant cat. And that was a phenomenal meal to have out in the woods. Winter camping is fun. One of the funnest parts about it for me, all the different types of food you can bring, it's totally different than, springtime, summer, or kind of three seasons, where it's a lot more of the dehydrated or frozen, freeze-dried meals. You can really just kind of bring really, truly kind of anything you want. And my breakfasts are big, too. Fresh sausage and eggs. Or bacon is another popular one that we do. And I load my oatmeal up, and it's just it's phenomenal eating winter, I think.
Vic, we are totally going camping this winter. Like, this is happening. Bring the pizzas.
winter camping changes the type of candy bar. If I may speak on the candy end for a moment.
Snickers aren't happening.
You don't want a Snickers bar with you when you're winter camping because you're going to lose a couple of teeth, or you got to have it up under your armpit or in your crotch for a half hour to temper it. But, a malt ball or a Kit Kat or a Toggy bar, those light and flaky candies out in the winter, they get cold, but they're easy to eat. And I know this past year's Minnesota, I want you Wisconsin boys to know this, that one of the hammock floor members in Gooby, must live near Racine, and he brought 4 Kringles from O&H Bakery. And every morning you get up out of your hammock and go over to the umbrella and the big fire, the parachute tarp and the big fire, and there would be a cut-up Wisconsin Kringle from O&H right there. And they have so much lard in them, even if it's minus 25, they don't freeze. They just get really cold. And packing calories and lard, a wonderful... I wept every morning, and there were frozen tears, coming down my face, stuck on my face like a man that had been to Everest. And it's just interesting what you discover in winter. You know, when Strung out and I went at minus 40. I was trying to think of what to eat, and I just went up to Cub and I bought a bunch of just meat sticks that have a lot of lard and fat in them, and you just cut them up in bite-sized chunks in a big baggie, and they don't freeze like solid, like a piece of hard candy. You can pick them up and put them in your mouth and just kind of be snacking on, or same with just pre-cooked bacon, put it in a bag, it's cooked, just snacking meat all day, and you just leave it open, and you just shove it in your gob all day long. And it's amazing that a constant grazing will keep your body way better. When you're standing there going, man, I can't believe, you know, it was like minus 30 in the day, and we're standing there going, I got to take stuff off. It was sunny. There was no wind. And I attribute a lot of it to us really just having those extra bags of food that were just out, and you just constantly grabbing them, putting them in your mouth. So really important, that winter chow. You can't think of your food like you do in the summer or the spring. You've got to bring a little bit more and get the things that don't freeze solid.
I'm going to throw Nick under the bus. I think this was the one, Nick, and you brought stuff to make a dump cake, and that was phenomenal. So, Nick, you can talk about that maybe.
Yeah, so, you know, some people eat to live, and when I'm in the woods, I like to eat. A lot of people will tell me to go home quite a bit heavier, even when I'm doing, like, survival programs or summer camping. I feed people pretty well, and every winter hang that I've been doing, I've got my pulp soy with me, so I throw all the stuff in there, and I usually throw a cast iron pot in there, a Dutch oven, and I'll make like a dump cake, and kind of become a tradition. Sometimes we'll do two or three different kinds, but I just use just three ingredients. You got a can of your favorite pie filling, you got a mm-hmm. box of yellow cake mix, you throw it on top, and you sprinkle a
yellow cake
up on top of that, and you let it bake.
Yellow cake.
And yeah, just real simple. You know, I take reflector ovens out too. And back last weekend, I was out and we were doing brownies by the campfire, stuff like that. You know, it's food that's more familiar. You know, you can bring bigger things out there. I mean, you're cooking like real meat and real food and real vegetables, as opposed to summer backpacking trips in the wintertime. If you got a big pot and you're doing real food, you know, the possibilities are endless. And with a Dutch oven, I mean, you can do anything.
I bet that dump cake, if there was anybody that was on the verge of cold and miserable and you pulled that dump cake out, their spirits instantly soar. You can see it in people out there that are on the edge. If you're, you know, it's funny, in this winter camping there, for most of us up here, if the year works right, there is a big group hang that some of the hammock forum people do. Or like Nick, you were saying, you hike with a group of people through a access them through a different way. So you've got a group of people, and boy, somebody just whips something out like a biscuit or something, and it can just turn things around. It's the life of the party, and it seriously does warm people up who might just be on the edge of, like, you know, you hate, all of you guys have seen it too, and we've all been that person. You're out with a group of people, and you're neither warm nor cold, and you're more on the side of cold, and I am just about ready to be done with this.
Vic can tell you this too. There's been a couple times, I think this was in the winter, when I first started doing this a few years ago, bake like 3-4 days a week. I was baking just everything in sight. And I started a couple years ago bringing the I used a natural leaven bread. I was getting really into it, and I found that if I bake these beautiful crusty sourdough breads, I could bring these big loaves out to the woods, and the hard sort of crusty, you know, outer shell. When the bread would freeze solid at night, the crust would protect the inside from going stale. So then before bed, we'd, you know, pass around a cup of soup, or we'd throw some broth into our cups, you know, some water, and mix up some broth. And then, you know, we'd cut a big chunk of bread off, warm it up, and we'd just kind of, you know, nibble that before bed. Just, you know, warm soup and sourdough, or in the mornings, you know, just melt some butter in a little metal pan by the fire. And it just warms you up so quick, you know, a little boost of calories.
I was going to say, the melted butter and sourdough, the best thing. That was amazing.
Yeah, I still do it, too, every year for a lot of the winter trips that I do. And I've even, like, done some baking from scratch. I think I was with you, Tom. We did sourdough biscuits. I had the reflector oven, and I brought some leaven with me, kept inside my shirt. And then
was that the one where I slept while you baked them?
Yeah, that's right. We got out there, you fell asleep. And, I let the dough rise, like, all day long inside my clothes. And then in the evening, I pulled it out. We made biscuits right by the fire. They were, you know, just fresh biscuits. You know, stuff like that, like you were saying, Shug, it can really turn a group around, or a person, if they're having a hard time
you know, it's I remember a couple of hangs. There was a member named Pilo. I haven't seen him, and he doesn't post a lot. And he usually kind of dresses in camo head to toe, and he's a tall chunk of man, like 6'5". And he'll come out there with a pulk, and he'll have two cast iron ovens. One was a tater tot casserole, and the other one was like a spaghetti with meatball. And when he whipped those lids off, you know, you just saw everybody just, you could just feel the warmth happen. You know, it's amazing when somebody really whips out a delight winter camping. On the other hand, when you're kind of going out by yourself, you know, you're trying to do that mix of or two people where each person's doing their own food for the most part. You're really happy when you've thrown in some extra goodness. Cry of the Wild, I'd love to hear describe that sourdough bread again. You to do it in this voice when you talk about that crusty bread with that hot middle in it. Oh, that was a delicious moment.
This past weekend, I tried a recipe I'll be doing this winter. It was just from scratch, French onion soup. But soup is good in wintertime because it keeps you hydrated. It feels good. But again, I had the reflux rubbins out with the baguettes and the square cheese, and yeah, I think that'll be on the menu this year for Frozen Butt.
Well, listen, let me say something while it's on my mind here, because here's my thing. Part of this is due to my age, and again, while we talk about this winter camping, even though you can pick these bullet points, it's sort of like hanging a hammock. Again, there's 27 different elements to deal with that can make or break your success rate on it. And I found with, you know, I've done winter camping backpacking trips where I've moved my camp daily, and that's a lot of work because the days are short. It's getting dark in the woods by 4:30, by 3:45 on a day when it's not sunny. It's, you know, how it gets darker in the woods earlier. So your days are short and your nights are long, and to break up a camp that's stamped out, you know, when you go hang your hammock in deep snow, you have to walk between those two trees with your snowshoes and pad down an area, and then I've learned to bring a small 1 pound black diamond shovel because you're going to have all these little roads you build with your snowshoes that eventually be your pass through camp. But you have to build up your little snow wall by your tent and move snow, do something with it. And it's a lot of work. So I've come to the thing now where I really prefer to pull a pulk, you know, just go out a couple of miles because the woods are the woods. And then you go out on day hikes, but you bring stuff where you absolutely know you're going to be comfortable and don't approach it so much as a, I don't know, I think of myself more as a winter canoer with when I'm pulling my pulk. It's like going on a Boundary Waters trip. The rest of the year, I just like to walk of the pack. But in winter, it's like going, okay, my pulk is my canoe. And so my route has to change in my style. But when you have those little extras, like I bring a little fire blower to help me get fires going, a little hand crank thing. And now I have a little tube that Alex gave me the Wandering Fool gave me, that's just a little extendable tube that you can blow on a fire and really kick it up a lot better than a plastic or things I've used in the past. You're thankful for those. So now it's more like make camp. You've got this wonderful stamped out camp and do some exploring. That's what I like to do now. That would change if I had 8 days going out, but I'd still rather stay in a place 2 days, move, 2 days, move, because, it's a lot of work just setting camp. You guys, don't you agree?
Yeah, that's good point too. Like, cause in winter you have more freedom. Like in summer, spring, fall, you know, like, you know, since you generally stay on a trail and camp right off of that, but in winter you can kind of just go anywhere because there is no trail. And, yeah, that's pretty cool.
Drop off and follow those animal trails, right? They sometimes lead you right where you need to go. You know, a deer trail.
Yeah, all the good spots.
Mm-hmm. And it's half broken for you, in a way, you know, the snow is kind of packed from their little hoofy feet. It's amazing. But yeah, you're right, Frankie. I mean, it's we've all done it where you're backpacking and then you're way out there. It's a trail you've walked, like many times walking out to camps in Crosby, Manitou. You got to stop and kind of look at the woods and go, where did the trail go? And you can just, if you stare, you can just see where the snow just dips a little bit different than everywhere else, you know, or you're looking at the trees a different way or look chopped off ends. But sometimes you've got to stop and look even on a trail you've walked to kind of figure out where it is. So really, really changes a lot of things, but gives you access to a lot of places you can't walk in summertime and the rest of the year, the other three seasons. So you're right on that. I hadn't walking through swamps you wouldn't walk through in the summer.
Yeah, I remember reading about some geocaches that were up in the Adirondacks because you need the snow to be a certain depth to be able to reach the geocache up in a you know, crook of a tree or something like that. The landscape's totally different.
Oh, yeah. And you know, it's like even with snowshoes, like I've done a fair bit of experimenting. And now when I pull a pulk, I like my MSR Denali snow. they don't have the best float, but they've got tons of traction. If you're pulling a pulk, you need some traction, unless you're walking up a frozen river and you're only going up a hill to get to your camp or something. But for day hiking around, and I want to just float on the snow, man, I've done it before. I've carried my Ojibwe-shaped traditional wooden and leather snowshoes, and they're wide, and you're walking with just a day pack, and man, you're just like floating up on the snow, and that's such a cool feeling. But when you're pulling a pulk, you're kind of knuckling down. You're like a wheel dog on a dog sled team. You know, you're pulling that thing. There's easy moments, but a pulk really isn't, especially if you're going on backpacking trails. In the end game, at the end of the day, they're not as easy as backpacking. You can bring more stuff, but it's not always just a romp in the woods with a pulk. What do you guys think on that?
When I'm hiking, it's backpack all the way. But yeah, if I'm camping, yeah, I would prefer to go a pulk too. But yeah, if I'm trying to crank in miles, the backpack just is, it's more practical, I think.
Oh yeah,
getting to
sure.
where like I need to go. But yeah, yeah, if I'm definitely camping, all the luxuries.
Yeah, if I'm backpacking, if I'm doing solo winter camping, I usually don't even do a fire. It's a lot of extra work.
So I'll
bring my stoves and extra fuel, but I'll take a pack. But with the pulk, most of my winter camping is with groups, and we're base camping. A lot of times I'm providing for the group too, so it makes more sense to pull a pulk. But the snowshoes, like you were saying, having traction, you know, really makes a big difference. And I spent some time in Canada this summer, and one of the guys I was staying with was showing me these snowshoes, and they were 4.5 feet long. And I'm thinking to myself, you know what? When the snow is four and a half feet deep powder, you know, all these modern snowshoes, they're real short, they're cute. You know, they got parts that come off and don't come off and whatever. But if you need the flow and you need to, you know, not even worry about sinking in the snow and you got stuff you're pulling, those 4.5 foot snowshoes look like they do pretty well.
Yeah, you're floating, man, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So maybe I can chime in here for a second. It's one thing that I started doing, I think it was a year or two ago. I bring two sets of boots now. One is specific for my snowshoe for hiking. If I'm moving, and I actually have to do miles during the day in the winter. It's definitely not as warm, but they're more compact. I don't know what the name is, but they're my snowshoe hiking winter boots. But I definitely
have Keen, are they the Keen Growlers?
You know, I honestly have no idea, but
okay.
I know that. But the point of the system is that I have a pair of smaller, you know, boots, but they don't have so much room in the foot box. And they're definitely not as warm because of that, but also because of that, I bring a second pair of boots always, leave them in the pulk, and then I have another pair of boots that I wear around the camp. You know, I'm just standing around camp, standing around the fire, that I wear around the day that are much looser, that I would probably get into blisters if I actually tried them, but my feet stay so much warmer in those boots because there's so much more room around in the foot box for my toes to wiggle and for that dead air space. I find that for me that helps tremendously versus, you know, going, and they're just I wouldn't say cheap pair, but they're just a less expensive pair from a store like Fleet Farm or Nip a store from a farm type store.
Well, so what you're saying is that's your active boot. That's when you're on the move and your foot's going to naturally stay warmer anyway. You know, a lot of these will say good down to minus 20 and they mean in an active eight, but you know, all of us know who have been in winter up here, you know, and it's like, it's a big thing of telling people on these hangs because it's good. You know, Bick, I mean, if somebody's feet, that's the first thing to go on people, whether they're standing
right
around or in a hammock, is their feet are going to get cold. And we've all seen that person suffering and it ruins their trip. You know, if they can never get their feet warm and to bring two pairs, I'd be happy to camp with a guy like you because I don't have to hear you going around going, my feet are so cold, but everything else is good. You know, and the footwear is and how you man, you know, and the speed you, if you're pulling a pulk or if you're backpacking, you know, we've all discovered, you know, you can start sweating profusely depending on the kind of person you are. And I know when I winter, I constantly have to tell myself to slow down because you've got to ride this line between sweating and not sweating, right on the edge, because sweating in winter is horrible because it's that you're going to stop at some point, and that's when you find your butt cheeks just quivering going, my God, I wish I could do that when I wanted to. But on command, but they're just quivering. And it's like, you know, I've been there before. My butt cheeks are so cold from sweat running down my back. So winter dictates the pace of your trip a lot, too. And there's times you've got to speed up to get warm. You know, it's like your hands are freezing and you've got to pump it up and pump those arms a little harder and swing those hands and get some blood down in them. So, you know, taking care of hand, like I know it was on the list, hands, feet, and head are super important out there, too. And not always the the sexiest, most fun thing, but your boots, and like Vic said, he's got a system for himself now. And that's what you got to come up with, is what system works for you. And if you're going to be with people, boy, there's nothing nicer than being nice and toasty out there, right?
One of the things that I started doing, I think it was 2 years ago now, is, and a lot of people already do it. I know, Franke, I know you use vapor barriers, so you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. But using a vapor barrier sock, even if it's just a plastic bag, but using that plastic barrier against your skin, especially when it's extremely cold, it's just all your insulation dry, your boots, your socks, and that dry insulation really makes a big difference. When I'm leading bigger groups, it's on the list. They got to have it. I bring extra pair, and it's at the end of the day, you don't see a bunch of boots kind of melting by a small fire, because people's feet are not quite so cold, and their boots are going to be dry. There was one guy actually made me a couple pair of plastic socks with a vacuum sealer and a couple rolls of the heavy duty plastic. He just kind of made these sock shapes for me, and they're really, really heavy duty, but good little DIY thing, but it makes a huge difference.
I wanted to say Mukluks. I've been using Mukluks, and Mukluks, and this is, I'm talking to hammock guys here, so you'll understand this analogy. Mm-hmm. The Mukluk for the foot is like the underquilt for the butt.
Yep. I was going to say, I used the military Mukluks. I bought my first pair last year. They're $30 on eBay, and shipped to my house, I think I spent $50 on them, and I've never had a boot so warm. And they come with a wool sock in there, and they come with two felt liners in there.
Yeah.
But the pair that I bought was too big. They run, I think, two or three sizes each pair, and the pair I had was too big. So I actually had a pair of Sorel boot liners that I picked up at a Bella's or something. It was a bargain cave for $5, and I keep them in my car in case my car were to break down and I need to throw something on my feet. But these liners fit inside the Mukluks just perfect to make them fit my feet better. And these things are just so warm. And
that, because those felt liners around your feet, wonderful. I remember being on the minus 40 trip with my, I had just bought the Steger Mukluks, and I'd had them for a short time. And I was doing the thing where I thought, it said, okay, well, it only says one good pair of thick socks in them, so of course I'll double up. And I put two pairs of socks on and still felt like I had room in there, and found my foot getting my feet aren't as warm as I feel like they should be. Took the Mukluks off, took the extra sock off, went with the way Steger designed it, with one nice thick pair in that big wool liner with those extra insoles in there and everything. My foot got instantly warm. And, it's like that same feeling when somebody gets your underquilt tight, but that wool on your foot, in that non-active camp wear. I got to say, this year at the Winter Hang, where a lot of people were having a great time, but even in the day, there's some cold footitis. You're kind of just sitting around a lot, and sometimes you end up sitting around away from the fire, but you're near the group, and, your feet are the first thing to get cold. And when you're wearing Mukluks, you just look at everybody going, oh, those poor, poor souls and their little cold popsicle toes. I wish I was a nice enough person to take off my Mukluks and offer them, but I'm just not that good of a soul.
Do the Mukluks freeze at the end of the day?
They will kind of freeze on the outside. I mean, they're, if you're a sweaty guy like me, like I've hiked in mine so that I could bring that extra set of liners and change them out. And, that moisture comes through to the outside of the Mukluk and just freezes like ice, and you just knock it off. But inside, you're dry and good. Now, you don't want to be in wet snow or puddles or any wet. This is for very good dry snow, minus, down in the zeros when there's no chance of wet snow. Minnesota, Wisconsin, Canada, these upper states, I would imagine, up in New York State where you are, guys, the Buffalo area. It's amazing to spend what you would spend on a underquilt and get a good pair of Mukluks, and your feet are going, it took you that long.
Got to spoil them more often, because I use the I use the overboots, the minus below 40 K whatever overboots, and they're just like neoprene that go over my trail runners, because they give me basically the same functionality of a trail runner, and it works really well. But man, and my feet would be dry, because I, like what Nick was saying, I use vapor barriers and my feet would be perfectly dry. But at the end of the day,
my everything was frozen. Like I could like beat someone to death with these things. They were so frozen, and I had to like soak them by the fire, including my trail runners. So hearing the mucklucks and just kick them off, that's pretty rad.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that. Like when you were on the move all day, were you able to? Your system where you were doing the trail runners with the Neo, those overboots, I've looked at below 40 side. I've looked at their stuff a lot. They have a lot of different types. And I saw yours. Were you able to be warm in camp wearing those? Like, you know, in that time after you've eaten, like I'm sure backpack and you probably ate, went straight into the hammock. Cause when you're by yourself, you ain't standing around much in the winter.
During the day I was with vapor barriers. You want to be kind of like always cold. Like I call it, you got to give yourself the tingles. So you want to have like that, you know, tingly feeling you get when you're cold, because then I know I'm not going to sweat. Like you were making the comment earlier about, you know, how sweating is bad. So I would basically get the tingles and I wouldn't sweat and I could go. And there were some times where it'd be like below 10 and I was like just venting. Like I had my zipper down on my jacket and, you know, I'm trying to like do it. But as soon as I stopped, I get cold like immediately.
You have to get your down out and all that. Yeah, it was. That's why, you know.
And I had it in one of my water bottle pockets. So I had to like pull it out and put it on. And at nighttime, I would just make fires because I had like 15, 16 hours of darkness and it got boring. Like you're just not
sure.
Much to do.
You know,
so.
No, that's a long night and it's a long walk. And like I say, you know, managing that, that speed and that sweat is a huge part of, you know, it's just like regular camping. You know, everybody gets excited about the gear they buy, their hammock, their tent, their stoves. And, you know, you think about clothing and individuals, but that clothing system you wear, even in hot weather, or you know, you get in the fall where you're hiking, and you know, we've all done it in the morning where you start out wearing that polar fleece on before I hike, and within 20 minutes you're stopping to take that off, and you know, your body's warmed up, and you're kind of taking off and putting things on all day. When you stop, you know, you're like, say you got that down jacket on the outside of your pack, put that on, because you get cold within 3 minutes. And that management and the discipline to go, when I stop, need to take that shirt out and put it on so I don't get cold, because then I got to work harder to warm it up when I take off again, so it'll break. And if you just manage that, it's a lot less work, even though it's kind of work doing it. But ultimately in winter camping, the more you're doing and the more you're moving, the better your body feels, because it's just warmer. You know, Wandering Pool was with me on a cold trip, and I could see it was cold by a fire. We were people, he's kind of shy, he was standing back a little bit. And I said, look, Kenny, we need to go back and tweak our tarps before we crash down for the night. The wind's picked up. And just by walking back there to lower our tarps, fiddle around that little last bit, you know, to re-engineer your pack for the night, getting your food bag ready, just doing that little amount of chores gets you ready to go to sleep and crawl in the hammock. But the thing is to, like, be that warm when you crawl in, whatever it is you have to do. And that's just, that gives you an advantage through the night, because all that down and everything's just holding in what your body is already at. I don't know the science behind it, but I just know by doing it, if I go to sleep cold, I'm cold all night. You know, it's like talking about earlier, I've laid there and even in my pod, the butt is going to be the last thing to warm up when you first crawl in. That sometimes 20 minutes, I don't know how you guys feel, but there's times I've laid there 20 minutes going, man, do I have a gap or something? Then suddenly, boom, your body, it's like that nice sourdough bread being done. Everything is just up to temperature, and then you got to pee and get out and go.
That is a really great segue.
I'm a get up and go guy.
I wanted to talk about, and one was this, which got us in a really long conversation. The other thing, and Shug, that was perfect, was getting up and going to the bathroom, and because when it's cold, right, our body's processing faster. You end up peeing a lot more. And I think it was a couple years ago, somebody in Hammock Forums, Jason Drury, another Minnesota guy, came with this, or at least I think he came up with it. He was the guy that told me about it, and there was a post on Hammock Forums, and he called it the pee extender. And I don't think this is fully adopted by other winter hammock hangers. It's revolutionized, literally, the way that I keep in my hammock. And so it's just a PVC drain pipe, and I pack it in my pulk in the winter, and I stick it next to my hammock, just stick it in the snow. And in the middle of the night, when you got to go to the bathroom, you just pick that thing up. You can stay completely in your hammock, completely covered in the down, totally warm, and you can go right from your hammock. You know, some people say that's disgusting, but when it's like negative 10 degrees out and you're trying to go to the bathroom and you come back and you got to back up and you got to lay there for another 30 minutes, get all your quilts warm. If you can just roll over and pee out the side of your hammock and you've got this pee extender and you don't have to worry about peeing on your hammock. For me, that was revolutionary. That the first time I used it, and I was, and I was completely encompassed in my down still. It was an amazing thing. And so I just wanted to give a plug here, just a PC drain pipe. And then when you're done, you stick it back in the snow, good to go.
Well, you know, right, going to the bathroom, and peeing, number one, we've spoken about number two, you've got to step outside of your hammock. But I've come to the conclusion that people are, that how you get up and pee, and I would think the same would be from a tent. Some people use pee bottles and some get up. I just get up because I'm kind of simple. And I've learned to enjoy that moment out, but the feeling in the winter of, like, even on that minus 40, like, I had to pee. Once I got all zipped in and warm, absolutely I had to get up and pee. And I factored into my trip. I just go, Shug, talk to yourself in the third person. Just get up and go right now. Grab the zipper, get out. And it's no hesitation. Think the system out. Think my moves out. Unzip. Go. Get out. Go into the muck lots. 4, 8 steps out there to my little yellow pea snow place and just do it. And I look around and enjoy the woods for a minute. And then it's just like no lollygag. Go back. Sit down. Mucklucks off. Get in. Stay calm. Breathe calmly. Let the body relax. Zippers up. Boom. And feeling of zipping that pod back up and being in all that down, but that there's still that cold in there with you. It's like putting on, I think of it as like when Hicks and I played in the woods as kids and we'd have to cross these creeks and we'd take our shoes and socks off and you get to the other bank and, you know, you're kind of drying your foot off by whirling your sock around it. And you put that sock on over that slightly wet foot shoe in and it's kind of warm and kind of wet. The same way getting back into the hammock after my pee.
It sounds awful.
it's just the way I do. I mean, it's just the only way. And I count,
you know,
on
whatever
just
works
getting
for
a glimpse of the night. But it's a very personal thing. You know, everybody's got their, like the guys with the pee in the bottles in them. And there's no change in anybody. It's kind of an interesting topic because people are really, you know, hey, man, I'm a PCP tube guy and always will be.
I like the Jedi mind trick my bladder and I sit there for 20-30 minutes like you don't have to pee, and then I realize that I can't use the force and then I have to get out, but it will take me like a half hour to get out of there.
Something that
Vic was saying before about the way your body metabolizes and you have to pee a lot more in the wintertime, when you're outside you don't have that thermostat control around you, so even in your hammock, even if you're warm at night, your body's kind of metabolizing a lot more. And so one of the things that I notice a lot is, you know, in the wintertime it gets dark at like 3:30, 4 o'clock. And
sure,
so
yeah.
Sometimes in the summertime it's easy to stay up and kick around the fire till midnight, 1 a.m. But in the wintertime, you know, after 4 hours of darkness, you get kind of tired and bored, and some people crash at 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock. And, mm-hmm. like, I always try to stay up, you know, at least till 9, 10, maybe even 11, just as I would the summertime, because I know if I crash at 7 o'clock, I'm going to be up. I'm for sure going to be up to pee in the middle of the night. And, I mean, you don't want to hold it in because you're going to sleep cold. You're not going to sleep at all if you're trying to hold it in all night. But, you know, I try and just keep up a little bit later, like, you know, like you do in the summertime, just to kind of get me past that 4 a.m. chill period, just to get through the night a little better. So I know if I go to bed early, it's, you know, you might be up once or twice.
You know what's interesting to hear in this whole discussion is I'm sitting here thinking that everything we've talked about, from your insulation to cold butt to food, it's just everything just ramps up a little bit in the winter and takes a little bit more focus and thought. You know, in the summer, yeah, you get right out of your hammock and pee and you got one top quilt. Winter, you got more stuff on. There's more layers to deal with in there. And whether you're crawling in your tent, you know, a little bit more work to get out. So everything's just everything's intensified just a little more. But if you know, all you guys know, when you're around in the day, some out on sort of a little jaunt, you've got your, sometimes I'll even, you know, I've got a, I call it a day pack, but it's kind of a big pack because you want to bring some lunch and you're going out in the snow all day. And I think it was Frankie said earlier, somebody was chiming in, the view in the woods is this wonderful winter camping because there's no leaves on the trees and you can just see. And it's the glory of what you're seeing and being and out there just is worth what sounds like a lot of work, you know, sitting in this conversation. Everything is a bit more work. You know, fire's more important, food's more important, warmth's more important, warm nose, hands, feet, footwear, clothing sims, you know, with everything, you know, you got to get your bomb-proof tent or your winter tarp for your hammock. So everything's intensified, and the payoff for that is like hanging by that fire, eating food. I mean, you guys will agree, right? Or you would never go winter camping. And I'm really saying to you guys, sub-zero camping is a lot more intense. Once it drops below zero or minus 10, the game changes slightly there with every 10 degrees. You know, minus 20 is a little different. Oh, minus 30 is a little different. You know, it gets a little bit, you're up another level of the mountain. The cliffs are a little steeper. It's got its rewards, though. It certainly does. It's just hard to put them into words.
Rewards are totally worth it. Then when you wake up in the morning after you've slept throughout the entire night, and then you just kind of like, man, I totally just did that. And you get to look at the temperature and think like, holy crap, I just slept out here in a piece of nylon or whatever throughout the whole night, and I lived, and you did it. And
it's awesome. And nothing looks prettier than the morning from the hammock in the snow, right?
Totally,
you keep out
that
tarp, right? Oh, man, it's just amazing, you know, whether it's cloudy or sunny, just the view is awesome. I like what Frankie said. You made it, and you went, oh, no, I'm warm. I'm waking up, and I'm like, there's nothing like waking up in that hammock and going, I'm not even cold. I'll tell you this. I'm at minus 40. I went out with strung out with my pod system. Now, I had a little doubt in my mind that at 4%, I was going, man, this thing, maybe it won't. This is pretty cold. And because I took the time to be warm when I went to sleep and followed my system, I mean, I woke up, and I got to say, my feet were the warmest thing on me. They never even got cold. The two big pair of loose wool socks in my pod, which is a 20-degree Western Mountaineering Alpine Light mummy bag, and inside I had my zero-degree War Bonnet Yeti, and I had my zero-degree War Bonnet top quilt. And I'm just in that pod of warmth, and I have my jacket over my feet, and I wasn't sweaty, and I look at that video, sometimes it still gets a lot of comments, and I'll look at it once in a while, and I'm sitting there in my orange parka, and it's not even a serious winter parka, you know, it's an outdoor research, you know, probably good down to 20 degrees. I'm just sitting there having breakfast, talking to the camera, and it's like minus 32, because I slept that warm. I was that warm. I was able to take layers off and sit there and enjoy the morning in the tarp, having some coffee from the hammock, basically just having coffee from the hammock and doing a morning ramble, being thrilled. Like Bronchi said, you wake up and you go, oh man, it's like minus 37 and I'm awake and warm. There is a little bit of you guys got to agree, like in winter camp, it's like doing a 25 mile. If somebody were to do a 25 mile day in good weather, when you've gotten through the night in that serious cold, there's just kind of like, I think all of us backpackers have these little challenges to give ourselves. And in winter, that's certainly one, is to wake up warm and comfortable and happy. And you go, I did it.
Yeah. It's that whole man versus nature. It just feels good, you know? Like in winter, I feel more like I'm one with nature than I do in summer because there's less people, which I like. You know, I can see more and all these, but it's just so much more challenge. It just feels so good when I wake up and I successfully done it. Even if I didn't die, like, and I was cold, I still feel pretty good.
Because you can get up and get warm, you know? I mean,
yeah, jumping jacks, I'm good to go. So I'm not, you know, that's fine. But if I can wake up
going,
warm.
Get a hot, and having that hot drink, sitting there, I got to tell you, for me personally, sitting in that hammock in that minus 40, having that hot coffee, sitting in my hammock, sitting up there, is what that trip was about to me. Enjoying that morning, looking out there, that feeling of like going, made it. Now I got a cup of coffee to be beautiful. I get to do it again tonight. I feel confident, but I can't get cocky. And also kind of knowing if we had to, we were 2 miles, 2.5 miles from the car. You know, we could have easily. I mean, not to say that things couldn't go wrong, and that's the don't get cocky part. Never underestimate what nature could do. You know, a tree can fall on you out there in the winter, too. Things could go really bad. I mean, I think about that 10 times more, which is why I'm getting to where only if I really know where I'm going, and I know there's people will, like, take a solo anymore, because if you snap a leg hiking around on a day hike in the winter, laying there on the trail, you might not live. In the fall or something, you might have an uncomfortable night, but you know, in minus 20 weather and you're not prepared, you're in your day stuff. So, you know, it's kind of nice to have somebody there too. Maybe I'm just getting older and, or bring that in reach, but I'll go up to Crosby and do a solo up there because people do come up there in the winter. It just sort of changes everything. You know, like Frankie said, he feels more alive. You're just going this other level in nature. And, I'd like to see people. I think you should do a podcast for people in Texas who camp in that heat. I don't understand how they do that, how they hike in 103 weather and sleep out. That baffles me. I'd rather go cold than hot. So
I just did 85 in Florida with no underquilt and was so hot and miserable, I went inside. You're right. It's a whole different ballgame.
See, I was out 2 or 3 weeks ago up in the Porcupine Mountains. It was about 60 at night. And I had my arms and legs hanging out on the ground. I was 20 feet from the water. And there were three people out there hammock camping, too. They had hot water bottles in their sleeping bags already.
Really? In 60? Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Let's do a round really quick. One thing from each of you on piece of advice or something you love about cold weather camping or four-season hammock camping.
A piece of advice I would give? You know, it's a neat challenge for yourself. And I always wonder every time I backpack why people, because it's a strange sense of fun. You know, it's like watching a runner go by. I live where a lot of runners go. You ever see a smiling runner? No.
Oh, it's great.
They always look like they just got a tax audit or have a root canal. But they're pushing themselves on this goal. And to go winter camping, I think, is number one, maybe you've spent some money on equipment. And, you know, we see people that go out maybe a little over-prepared, under-prepared. I mean, there's this great level of preparation, I would say. It makes you rethink your system. And the first time you go, like everybody talked about their fails, you'll probably fail in a lot of areas, but you're going to learn so much. And like the first time you go to climb the rock wall, and your friends have been going a lot, and they're climbing really good, and you're even stronger than them, and you can't get up the wall. Well, you don't have the technique yet, and the balance, and the mindset, and you haven't done the work. And I think it's like when I got into hammocks. Sorry, here's the easiest way I can say it and move on. When I got into hammocks in 2007, it reinvigorated my backpack, and I needed it at the time. Brought a new thing to it. I had more to fool around with. And if you go winter camping, the same thing happens. Now, you might go and just totally not like it, but I think you should give it a couple of tries. If you're thinking of it, or if you live in a cold weather state, you can extend your backpacking season. You do have to invest in some equipment, but you can certainly go on, you know, push your limits. If you've only, you know, if you've gone on a 21 degree trip, shoot for a zero and just kind of bolster your equipment as best you can. You know, bring an extra old sleeping bag you had, just go gut it out. I think you might shiver through the night, but you're going to have a lot of payoffs in the day when you're able to move around. And you look at the woods. It's like the first time you see your girlfriend dressed up for the prom, you go, wow, you know, you could look like that. I mean, I liked you in flannel and jeans, but now you're in a gown with red lipstick. Well, the woods take on a different look that you've never seen. That's about the best way I can describe it. It's just puts on a different costume. Just go do it and go see it if you live in a cold weather place so you can camp more. You can get out more. End of comment.
All right, Vic?
You know, I think Shug said it pretty well. I was trying to think what I was going to say. I'll highlight two. The favorite part maybe that you're camping, you know, we talked about it before, and it was before we started recording. You know, for me, if I go more than just weeks without getting out and I go backpack, get out into the woods, I to go real stir crazy, anxiety problems, I get all stressed. And so, you know, for me, just the best part of winter camping is that I'm still camping. I just get to get out there. I get to be doing what I want to do. So that for me is number one. And then, so if I had to pick one more thing to and Nick's going to beat me as a naturalist and his fire starters and stuff. But I buy these little fire starters from Menards, wood stoves. But they come wrapped in like a cellophane plastic. And I don't know
with
what
the white
inside of them.
Yeah, with the white inside, the little white thing.
Yeah, I think those things are phenomenal. Yankee or his brother showed me that. But they're just phenomenal fire starters. Light them right up and they'll burn for like 10 minutes. Just excellent getting a fire started in the winter.
I just lit my fire tonight with one of those. They're great to have a couple of those in your pocket. They work every time. So.
Yep.
It's paraffin and, you know, maybe some naphtha, and there could be a little nuclear waste in there. But, hey, man, it's just a little bit. Everything in moderation.
Yeah, I just find that they work. They work great.
Yeah. It's not the poison. It's the dose, right?
Yeah, and it's just by taking a couple. It's like people that bring a couple of hand warmers. It could make her – I don't use them a lot. I try not to depend on hand warmers. I find myself once in a while, I'm just going to put two in, and I never use them. I'm sorry. I did use one day where my hands were cold, and I put them inside underneath my glove system and my possum down gloves, but I put them right on my wrist. I don't put them up in my hand, or else I'll put them on the back of my hand. If you put the little small hand warmer in your glove right down on the part of your wrist where, not the back of your wrist, that veiny part, boy, well, and you don't even realize you have them on there in the day you're going, why am I in such a good mood? I'm giving people candy and hugging people and telling people that I really miss them and love them and I'm getting all mushy. It's because my wrists are warm and I feel good. All these little things, like little extra things in the winter, they're not really luxuries. They're kind of, they could save your life.
Nick, one piece of advice you'd give to anybody who asked you about hammock camping.
Yeah, I just got to say the pick that he usually gets up before I do, so I don't care how he starts the fire. as long as he's got it going when I get out of the hammock, I won't judge.
I saw you one time. I saw that you got out of your hammock, had bacon wrapped around your shoulders, and as you were walking over shirtless, minus 15 weather, you took bacon from your shoulders and threw it into the fire to cook. I did witness that. That is a man called Cry of the Wild.
Yep. thanks. Piece of advice for winter camping. You know, kind of like what Shug was saying, I got my first hammock in 2009, and for years growing up, I always wanted a winter tent, and I never got one because nobody in my family camps. I had nobody to go with, and they're expensive. So I got like a Hennessy hammock, bought it at a discounted price, and I wanted to use that as my winter shelter. I thought I could pull it off. I did a little bit of research, and that really was a game changer for me because I had stopped going out a lot of camping and everything, especially in college. Once I got out there in the wintertime, it just everything kind of fell into place. I take people out in the wintertime all year round. I'm a wilderness instructor now. It's what I do for a living. And but the hammock really was what did it for me. And winter camping was a real catalyst for that, too. It opened up 6 months out of the year that I can now go out and enjoy the woods. And in the wintertime, you know, kind of like what Shug was saying before, too, there's a different look, there's a different feel to it. And, you know, in the summer when there's a lot of people up there in traffic and, you know, it's hard to get a sense of wilderness sometimes. But in the wintertime, it's just so quiet. You know, you can hear the trees crack.
There is a lot of muffled silence in the snowy woods, you know, that, you can hear other things really crisply. Funny what he points out, there's a different silence in the woods in winter. You know, anybody in the snow has heard that sort of a muffled,
such an
insulator. When snow falls out of the trees and hits in the snow, it goes. It's not a sharp sound.
Yeah, when I go out to the woods originally, and I still do. It's a place that's really calm. My mind is always racing. My gears are always turning, and it's sometimes I can't even sleep because I have so many sort of ideas and interests that just never stops. When I'm on the woods, you know, I've got a fine arts background, and I can, for me, especially hammock camping, it's been a really creative outlet too. I'm out in the woods, and I like to make things, like to do different things, play with the shelter. Sometimes during the winter hangs, especially just because we're sitting on the fire all day, I like to kind of challenge the group. So one year we were making tongs. Who can make the best pair of tongs? We had 7 different designs that worked. And one year we were making tip-ups from nothing but sticks and parachute cord. And we had all these different designs, and we were catching fish on them. It was really interesting and kind of different, you know, because you're not hiking so much in the wintertime on a lot of these trips. So I find other ways to kind of keep busy and be creative and have fun out there. But the silence is different and the feel is different. And certainly when you wake up in the morning and you're warm and you hear the fire crackling that, you know, big got started for you 3 hours earlier, you know, it's a really nice feeling. So, you know, I try and share that with other people now. And every year it changes a little bit. Some years are warmer and colder than others. And the gear's always changing around too. But it's really something I think everybody should experience who likes camping. And it doesn't have to be expensive. Doesn't have to be a terrible experience. I think people are intimidated by the cold. So I think going with a group from like hammock forums or with a meetup group or Facebook group, just going with a group of people to try it out for an overnighter, it's the best way to go. See what other people do, you know, and learn from them. I learned so much of my stuff from everybody else that I went. So I think I have to say, if you ever thought about winter camping, try it out this year. Go with some friends and give it a shot.
And have fun. Bronky, one thing from you?
I would just, if you're interested in winter camping, for sure do it, and then do it more than once. Because there are things like, you know, you have like the underquilts and the top quilt and all that stuff, which of course make it a lot more comfortable. But it was one time we did Afton. Shug, I think you were there for sure. And we had Dee Bjerknes, and it got down to minus one. No underquilt. He had 4 pads, and I promise 2 of them were yoga pads. And he made it through the night.
He had yoga pads.
Yeah, and he sucked it up. I think he had a terrible night, but he did it. And then it was like a month later, we did the frozen butt hang, and he survived minus 19.8, and he didn't give up. And I think most people would have. So you know, it's, there's something like, cheesy, it sounds magical about being in the woods. You know, like I like to backpack with my dog and, you know, I go out there and I have this, you know, northern dog and we go out there and it's just us. And it's quiet and it's just, you know, a man and his dog in nature. And it just, it's just such a different feeling. You know, I don't have to hear the bugs, you know, like me and stuff, or majority of the time, really annoying squirrels. It's just this quiet, peaceful feeling. You kind of stand there and you kind of look around. You take a deep breath. It's just like, this is so worth it. And it's just, you know, there's just nothing like it. And it's coming from Florida boy, you know, like winter camping is special. And you're probably going to hate it your first time out. But if you do it, you can keep it up. You're probably going to love it.
It's true what you guys were all saying about the silence. You hear less birds, you hear less squirrels, you hear less animal noise in general that you hear the rest of the year. You know, you'll go, I mean, the crows are still around in the, you know, in the winter, and you'll hear the crows. But a lot of the songbirds are gone. And so it's almost like, have you guys noticed that? That it's just, you're going, what makes it sound different here? There's just, you hear the wind more. You know, the wind is a lot more prominent. When you hear a big wind coming up in the winter and it's really cold, that wind sounds a lot more ominous. And, yeah, it sounds different, man, because it's got nothing muting it out unless you can hear a train or a cow mooing. But it just, yeah, it just sounds different too. Everything, you know, the sound of water running below ice, you hear that. You don't hear that the rest of the year, you know, totally frozen rivers and creeks, but always water running underneath. You can't get to kind of beautiful. It really is.
All right. Well, it's been great, guys. I think we're going to start wrapping it up.
So I know every month we try to cover some kind of a trending topic. And when I was going back through our notes, I realized that we'd never actually told people what HYOH means. And I know it means hang your own hang, but it's got some background to it beyond that. And I thought it might actually be interesting for us to take a little bit of time just to kind of talk about, you know, some of the acronyms that are in our industry that a lot of people see and might be confused by.
Especially for a lot of newbies, I think, you know, there's outside of, you know, what an underquilt is and all the different types of tarps and hammocks and all this, especially on all the forums, people tend to use these acronyms. And if you're a newbie, you have no idea what some of us are talking about.
Yeah, that's pretty true. Well, HYOH means hang your own hang, but it actually refers back to an older hiking acronym, which is hike your own hike. It basically means do your own thing. Nobody's going to judge you for finding what works for you.
Yeah, and it's all just about basically we all have the same mantra, just getting out there and spending some time in nature. Mm-hmm. Where it depends, you know, some people like to go ultralight, some people like to go
ultra,
you know,
heavy.
Like they got a, yeah, ultra heavy, the two ends of the spectrum. And it's as long as you're out there and enjoying yourself.
Yep, do what works. What are some of the other acronyms that you've seen that might be confusing or surprising to a newbie?
Well, I guess starting right at the top with our insulation, you've got the UQ or the TQ, your underquilt or topquilt.
Right.
You know, most of us aren't sleeping in sleeping bags. You know, we're using our underquilt for keep our backsides warm and topquilts to keep our topsides warm.
Yep. And then there's also RL, or ridgeline, or SRL, which is a structural ridgeline.
Yep.
Those are the parts that go with your tarp or hammock. So I know I've got a ridgeline that I connect my tarp to, and that's what connects the tarp to the trees. Not everybody uses a ridgeline with their tarp. For instance, on my Hennessy, I connect the tarp directly to my suspension, but a lot of people use a ridgeline. A lot of times that gets confused with a structural ridgeline, which is a little different, right? That's for the hammock itself.
Yeah, yeah. So you're keeping your sag and all. I have a adjustable ridgeline on mine, which is basically a big whoopee sling. And so I can adjust it depending on the distance of the trees and all, and it sort of keeps it more consistent.
Is that the same thing? Is that the same thing as a CRL or continuous ridgeline, perhaps?
I would say the continuous ridgeline is for your tarp.
Oh, right.
So you've got your, basically the tarp is hanging underneath. If it's above the tarp or under, or continuous ridgeline going underneath it where the tarp is sort of hanging on the ridgeline.
Mm-hmm. Big one that we're going to
hear a lot of complaining about, and that actually came up a number of times in today's conversation with CBS, right? Cold butt syndrome?
Yep.
Yeah, I saw an interesting video on this, and it's basically like we just talked about earlier, the fact that your butt is what gets cold first from the convective currents underneath you.
Yeah, well, with the sleeping in the hammock, your insulation can be a little tricky if you don't really know what you're doing or just how, you know, if you don't know what to expect.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. What else we got?
Let's see, we've got undercovers or UC, I'm sorry. Yep. UC undercover or a TC, a top cover.
Right. I've actually got that as part of my Hennessy system. And in essence, the undercover and top cover are designed to decrease some of the convective chilling. I know the top cover can go over your hammock ridgeline if you have a structural ridgeline or a regular ridgeline, and that keeps you a little bit warmer by preventing a breeze from passing over your hammock or through your hammock. And then the undercover does a similar thing. It prevents a wind from taking the warm air out of your underquilt.
Right.
So that works pretty well. Those are kind of a useful addition to an existing system. Do you DIY or MYOG?
Yes, I sure do. DIY, do it yourself, or MYOG, make your own gear. Yeah, that's probably one of the biggest. There's threads on a bunch of the forums for hammock camping, specifically DIY, on what makes, you know, a different option of just purchasing all, you know, each individual piece, customizing it, making to your own.
Yeah, there's a lot of creative folks out there, and it's really great to see, you know, people being proud of something they did. I always feel like $1 million when I use gear that I made personally.
Yeah, yeah, it's real. It's something you're proud of, that, you know, you just bought these raw materials and put it all together.
Yep.
And now it's something useful.
You know what my first DIY gear was?
What's that?
It was a PLUQ.
Oh, and that would be?
A poncho liner underquilt.
Oh, okay.
I actually bought a whoopee, they call it in the military, mm-hmm. or a poncho liner, and simply doubled it up and ran it through the grosgrain border that was on the underquilt, ran the suspension lines through there, and attached it to the bottom of my hammock. It was my very first DIY thing, and it was very simple and very stupid, and it worked great. It kept me warm the first time I stayed out overnight with just a hammock, and after I realized that I needed more than just a sleeping bag.
learning the hard way.
Yeah, unfortunately, but it's been a pleasure.
Yep. All right, next we got VB, vapor barrier. Another way to help keep you warm, but at the same time, letting some moisture to try and cut down on condensation and all. Popular could be like the Tyvek paper.
Yep.
And then the Reflectix, although that doesn't really, that's wouldn't really breathe very well.
No.
So.
Yeah. DL stands for a double layer. I know you can get a double layer hammock, and that actually helps to hold a pad in place if you're using a pad. I've also seen some circumstances where people will say a double layer hammock will keep bugs out more because of the extra layer of fabric.
Yeah, they can't bite through the two layers into you.
Mm-hmm.
And also a little it also helps for weight as well, correct? You know, a little more durability, it increases the weight capacity of a hammock.
Of the hammock, right, right. Yep. I thought you meant it makes it weigh less, and I'm like, no.
Yeah.
But
in a perfect world.
In a perfect world, everything would weigh less just by wishing it.
Yep. Yes.
That being said, there is a great link out on the forums that lists out these acronyms and a whole mess of other ones. So I'll put that in our show notes in case any of our listeners are bored out of their gourds and would like to go actually look up a lot of the other acronyms. There's a lot out there, like anything in any other industry as well. Next month is actually going to be a really fun episode as well. We keep coming back to what you're sleeping in every night, don't we?
Yeah, my Yukon double that was my first hammock, and I'm still chugging along. It's in great shape still.
Yep, and Christopher's in a double extra long, one of their long ones, and he sleeps in that every night in his bedroom now.
Oh, okay.
And so next month, I think it's going to be fun. We're going to have a chance to talk to Preston and Adam from Yukon Outfitters.
Yeah, we actually got to meet them at Trail Days when we were down in Virginia this past spring. A great bunch of guys.
Yeah, that's really cool. It's neat. Even just calling into there, you've got a pretty small group of guys. It feels a lot, you know, like a cottage industry. I don't want to give too much away about the conversation that we haven't had yet, but I think I think it'll be a fun time.
Yeah, it sure will be. And that's the show for this month. As always, you can find us at www.hyohpodcast.com or on our Facebook page at HYOH Podcast. If you like what you hear, please give us a positive review on iTunes. Or even better, you can join our growing team of Patreon sponsors.
Mark, if we hit our Patreon goal, we're going to go bi-monthly. Imagine interviewing two cool hammock campers every month. That's been the number one request in our social connections from our listeners, either over social media or via email when people communicate directly with us. If our listeners wanted to donate monthly, they can find the link to our Patreon campaign on our website homepage or buy us a cup of coffee by going directly to www.hyohpodcast.com/donate and simply making a donation of their choice. Mark, I don't know about you, but I have this thing with my t-shirts where I rotate them, you know, so I don't wear them all before I wear the first one again.
Okay, weird.
Yeah, but I keep cheating on the system. I wear my Haute Hammocks t-shirt. That I really like showing off that I'm kind of a bit of a nerd. This t-shirt and my Einstein t-shirt are the ones that keep getting picked out of the middle of the pile.
I like mine too, and it's gotten even more comfortable after a few washings. I'm sure that anyone who is proud to be a hammock camper would love to wear one. And since Haute Hammocks are one of our episode sponsors, our listeners can use the discount code HYOH15 when they go to HauteHammock.com. That's HAUTE hammock.com.
Cool.
And while they're at it, they might want to consider picking up a spare hammock for a friend so that they can hammock too.
I know a good place to go get one.
Yes. One of our other episode sponsors this month is Yukon Outfitters. And they have some really nice product on their website.
One of the things I really like is that they make sure that you get a suspension kit by default with your hammock. It makes it so easy to do the right thing. I think you should go check out their newest product by going to yukonoutfitters.com. They even have a hammock that's made out of 100% recycled content. Just a side note here, if you have a hammock-related business and you'd like to become an episode sponsor next month, we have another slot available on our show. This is a great way to tell the hammock camping community about your business, especially with the holidays coming on. Feel free to reach out to Mark or myself for more information.
Since we're thanking our sponsors, we should also acknowledge some of those folks who have become patrons or donated to our show. Thank you very much this month to Shug for his donation to, as he said, keep the hang going. Gary Kirk for the time he volunteered helping Jonathan improve his audio quality. And thanks to Sarge Vining for the nice compliment in his most recent video. As always, if you want to comment or have a question, please visit our Facebook page, or you can send me an email at mark@hyohpodcast.com.
And me at jonathan@hyohpodcast.com. Finally, special thanks to Skid Von Ark for allowing us to use his music for both our intro and outro, and to ITX for hosting our podcast. Thanks everyone for hanging around. A thin piece of fabric suspended in the air. Should I even try it?
Man, should you even dare?
Had two straps and a couple of toggles. How this would even work, my mind began to boggle.